codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
I have to warn everybody listening right now. I'm Scott, she's Allison. That's not the warning. This is our fourth episode we're recording today. And it's already gone off the rails from episode one. And my brain isn't functioning.
You're just a tiny little bit goofy today. You're a little bit off.
There's a tape delay involved. There's words not coming out right. So stick around.
This should be a fun ride.
This is the first time you're listening. Woo! You're in for it. Coming up on the show this week. Same as last week. So, this first one, we've talked about this company before, of Chewy.com. But again, similar story again. But we really want to show you that, you know, doing great is not just doing great things. It's doing great things consistently. So Chewy.com being a online pet and pet food store. So this is Karina. So Karina Sitkus has this here. What my cat's death taught me about marketing. I lost my soul cat this past Saturday, and if you know me even a little bit, or not at all, but happen to love animals as much as I do, you know how difficult it's been. Soul cat got sick in September, diagnosed with a heart issue. Two pills twice daily bought him five more wonderful months with his loving mama, but it was time for him to go, even if it wasn't, and would never be my time to let him go. In addition to his pills, he was on a prescription diet food, which I ordered from Chewy.com every few months. He passed away shortly after I ordered a new bag of food. I emailed to ask if I could send it back for a refund, and they sent me this. Hi there, Karina. I'm so incredibly sorry to hear you've lost your beloved Louis. Since you have a bag remaining, I've refunded the $62 to your account, which you'll see in 3 to 5 business days, depending on your bank or lender. As for that bag and any other leftover goodies you may have, we ask that you donate it to a local rescue or shelter in your furry friend's honor. Here at Chewy, we are all pet parents and completely understand how hard this time might be for you. We know our animals aren't just pets, they're family. We know it can help to talk to other folks who can relate, so always feel free to reach out. We're here for you now, and we'll be here in the months and years ahead. As your heart heals and you have time to consider opening your heart and home to a new furry blessing in need, know that we'll always be here for you. With furry regards, Brian V., Customer Service, Chewy. She goes on, a few things to note. They knew my soul cat's name and used it. They refunded my money. Maybe most importantly, they asked me to donate the food to a shelter, which, as a volunteer at a shelter, tugged at my heartstrings. I was a happy customer until the following day. I received a call at my office asking when I would be home because I was scheduled to receive a delivery. Having no idea who sent something, I went home to wait. They also sent me flowers with another personal note, and it said, we're sorry to hear about your loss of Louis. We're thinking of you in this tough time. Our deepest sympathies go out to you. If you need anything, we're always here for you. Love, Brian and the Chewy family. They arrived one day after the refund email, which means someone, probably Brian, had gone through the trouble of processing my refund, then immediately ordered flowers to be delivered to my home. As you can imagine, I am no longer a happy customer. I am a lifelong customer. And then she posted it on Twitter. And pictures of it, and Chewy replied to her post about it, saying, we were all so heartbroken to hear of Louis' passing. Pets come into our lives, leave paw prints on our hearts, and we're forever changed. Please know that no matter what, we'll always be here for you, Karina, with a heart emoji afterwards. As a marketing professional, I'm the first to be the cynic and see through any marketing a company does. And make no mistake, this is marketing. But it's so good, I don't even care. Because of Chewy's thoughtfulness, I went out of my way to share my experience with others. I publicly shared this story on my social media and told people about it in person. I wrote this post. Friends, families, and coworkers have started ordering or promised to start ordering from Chewy because of my story. Maybe because of my story, you will too. This is word of mouth. Authentic marketing at its finest. And yet, despite my knowing that this is marketing, I will gladly still spread the word. I am thankful to the company. I feel like they get me. They care about my needs. They help me mourn the loss of my Louis. And because they do, their marketing comes across as authentic and meaningful. One of my coworkers told me one of her friends also used Chewy and was so pleased with their customer service that she regularly promoted the company on her social accounts. What did Chewy do? They sent her a painted portrait of her pet. This is a company all pet owners should be using. Yes, I will now shout it from the rooftops, but it's also a company marketing professionals should be taking notes from. Bravo, Chewy. Bravo.
I like that story.
It's going to make me cry.
I like the idea, too, that like sometimes people, when we talk about marketing in terms of like using social or conversations, almost like it's a trick.
Yeah.
So, but I like the idea that of saying like, we know we're being marketed to. It's like commercials that we like to watch that are funny or well done. Or like we don't, it's not that we mind that people are trying to sell us stuff. We expect it. It's what the quality is, how well it's done. And in this case, just how much heart they put into it. It doesn't come across as phony because they consistently do it and because they put so much care into it.
I love also how Brian writes this email. I'm so incredibly sorry to hear you've lost your beloved Louie.
Not like us at Chewy. You're like, yeah, it's very personal. It's
personal.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's real.
Yeah.
And you can tell that it's just not a form letter. And you know, they're in a very emotionally driven industry.
They are.
Right. And but imagine other industries taking on this type of feel to it. Imagine your insurance rep saying, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
That you had a flood. I'm sure you lost them. Like that. Having sympathy, having empathy, caring, giving a damn about customers. And this is an online company. They are at the greatest disadvantage in this business. You need pet food, usually run out, right? Yeah. You need to go get it quickly. And yet they could treat people better without ever seeing them, their face, better than most retail stores treat people.
It reminds me of some of the Zappos stories that we've told to you about like where the person bought the shoes, was it for their mom or something? And then she passed away. And it's just, it doesn't need to be like, it's certainly fitting for their industry because of pets to have that connection around the community of pets. And we talked about that a bit. We did a chapter on branding where we looked at like, it was it Bissell, the vacuum cleaner, and working with animal charities because, you know, and that's marketing. It's saying, okay, so we sell vacuums. We want pet owners who are obviously cleaning up messes, as you and I know, pets make messes. And so we're going to do charity work focusing on animal issues. And of course, it's going to get them business, but they also really put the money in and the time in for animal like issues and concerns in their local shelters. And then people who use their products, they care about that because they have pets. And so it's not that we don't want to be marketed to. Right. We don't want to be tricked. You need to actually live it. It's not enough to just jump on a cause when you feel like it. You have to actually go along with it and believe in it. And so when that happens, when there's consistency and the congruence of values is actually real and practiced, then we don't care that it's marketing because it's real.
Congruence is a perfect word for that, right? So as an update for another company that we find amazing, so Endy, the online mattress company we talked about previously, on how great they are and how we ordered the wrong size mattress and they asked us to donate it to a charity that would give it to a family in need. And they were incredible. So we talked about them on the show.
And right now I'm looking at you and in the corner of my eye, I can see what was it? The sixth Endy mattress that we've bought?
It's sitting in a box.
Sitting there waiting.
So Endy, we didn't tweet about it. We didn't say, hey, Endy, we talked about you on the show. Just if you want to send
I
us.
I said I love Endy on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, you said you loved it, but we didn't.
Yeah.
So they wrote us out of the blue.
Yeah.
And said, we heard you, so it says, add on marketing, we heard you and Anna Allison are the only ones in your house not sleeping on an Endy. We can fix this. Please send us a DM and thanks for the shout out in your latest podcast.
That's awesome.
Now, mind you, I'm sure they got triggered by it saying, because every episode we put up, James does our notes for us and he'll link to the company. So the site would get a notification that somebody's linked to you and why.
And I did, they had followed me because I tweeted a couple times about how much I love them.
It's just really nice that they then would stand there and say, hey, you know, we want to talk to you.
It's about picking something that works. If you're going to look for something like that, if you really want to use the values and the convergence of values as part of your business, it's about picking something that is real. So for a pet food company, caring about the well-being of your customers' pets is real.
Yeah.
It's probably why you started your pet food company. It's probably why your employees want to work there. So it doesn't need to be faked. And it's like for Endy, they're partnering with a charity that helps people find beds and mattresses when they can't afford them. That works because they care about how people sleep. They care about the mattress. And so them partnering with it works. It makes sense. It converges. And then that's why if a big company all of a sudden jumps on a bandwagon of a cause, it can really easily turn bad because it's not authentic. It's not real.
And we have a cat meowing upstairs. I'm not sure if you guys can hear it, but we make as authentic as we can. So, Sarah and Andy, thank you for reaching out to us too. We will get in touch for a mattress. We bought 5 or 6 of them already. And I loved what Karina said in her post about Chewy, which was, I know this is marketing.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a marketer. Right. But the thing is, marketing is anything that impacts the brand, the view of the brand to people and spreads the word. Right. You know, the person, Brian, who wrote that, I'm sure did not say to himself, I'm going to market right now.
I'm going to sell something.
Right. Like, no, it's, I'm going to give a damn.
Yeah.
Right. And I really love this trend of companies. And it's only been online companies that I've heard of doing this, is that when you want to return something, instead of the cost of return, which is usually the cost of the product half the time, then just give it to a charity, give it to a shelter, give it to somebody else. Amazon is not the same way, but they're like, don't send it back. You know, keep it, we'll send you a new one type of thing. So I love that sake of just like, there's ways to help instead of having waste. Because some things you can return, like the mattress. And you can't return the mattress to Andy. They can't sell it again once it's been opened.
No, because it's already been opened.
So we give it to a charity, picks a family in need. So I love that. I love what Chewy does here too. So well done.
I have an article here from Adweek, and it says, IKEA wants you to pee on this ad. If you're pregnant, it will give you a discount on a crib. It's my favorite. So Swedish agency, Akastem Holst, Adweek's International Agency of the Year in 2017, has been killing it with the IKEA work in recent years. And it starts out 2018 with a splash, by creating a magazine ad that women are encouraged to pee on. Sounds a bit gross. Maybe it is, but there's a fun twist. If you're pregnant, peeing on the ad reveals a special discounted price on cribs, thanks to technology similar to that in pregnancy test kits. The ad was created in collaboration with Mercine Labs. See how it works here, and there was a video on the article. And it says the ad is running in Amelia magazine, which the agency says is one of Sweden's most influential magazines for women. Here's a bit more from the agency. In order to make the interactive functions of the ad work in reality, we had to make several technical advancements. The pregnancy test strip was used as a starting point, which relies on antibodies to find the pregnancy hormone, resulting in a color change. For scaling up of this technique and adopting it to the physical format of a printed ad, Mercine Labs has used their experience in development of surface active materials for microfluidics and medical diagnostics. Careful selection of materials together with a controlled capillary flow have been crucial for the success of the project. Technological advancements made during the work of this campaign have the potential to improve medical diagnostics. This is definitely the coolest pee-based advertising since Animal Planet put urine-scented ads in the bottom of lampposts to attract dogs, whose owners then saw a larger ad at their own eye level promoting the dog award show. How did I not know that Animal Planet put urine-scented ads in the bottom of lampposts to attract dogs, whose owners then bent down and saw a bigger ad for a dog award show? How did I know that that wasn't something that had happened in the universe?
Why did we not talk about that?
Yeah. I freaking love this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's fantastic.
It's awesome.
It's hilarious.
Just imagine that pitch meeting.
Okay,
IKEA. Just hear me out. Hear me out. You got to go all the way to the end, though. Hear me out.
It's amazing.
We have a few samples here. Martha, if you'll pee and show them this.
And like they had to develop new science, develop a technology to make. I think that's
when you know your agency is working for you. Come up with a new piece.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
And then do you take, do you take the ad in? Or does it reveals a coupon code, I know. But it'd be funny if you like had to take the ad in.
Yeah.
I'm here for my crib.
Golden. All right. So this is from The Verge. Course, it's always a good show when we can mention 50 Cent. 50 Cent. In 2014, rapper 50 Cent let people buy his album Animal Ambition using Bitcoin. He then let his account lie unused for years and only just recently discovered that he's now a Bitcoin millionaire. That's first reported by TMZ. At the time, a single Bitcoin was worth $662, and the rapper's fans could pick up the album for a fraction of that. In total, he pulled in over $400,000. Since then, the value of Bitcoin has soared. The price of cryptocurrency rose as high as $17,000 earlier this month, only to drop under $10,000 in recent weeks. At the time of writing, it was worth about $11,000. After sitting untouched in his account for years, 50 Cent earnings now are worth $7 million to $8.5 million based on the current fluctuation. 50 Cent confirmed his new windfall on Twitter and Instagram, saying, "Not bad for a kid from Southside. I'm so proud of me." He later commented on his post, "I'm going to keep it real. I forgot I did that. SHIT. LOL." Bitcoin evangelists on Twitter were quick to respond to 50 Cent, pitching him the various crypto platforms and coins that he should check out next. One of them even joked that 50 Cent would like the coin Deep Onion because it used to be valued at 50 cents. 50 Cent is just one of the many people who acquired Bitcoin only to forget about it. He's lucky that he remembered his login info. Many others have forgotten their old account logins and lost out on potential wealth, which will forever be locked away due to the nature of cryptocurrency.
I love that he just, like, didn't remember that he did it.
Mm-hmm. Whoops.
Like, what kind of a mistake is that? We should all fail up and like
which
that.
Is good, because didn't 50 bankruptcy a year ago? I think he applied
for
it.
Well, I think he's out now.
Yeah, well, his creditors are going to get a hold of his Bitcoin. That's trouble. All right. Well done.
I bet he defends his Bitcoin.
Get Bitcoin or die trying. That's 50's motto.
I feel like there's like some kind of like joke where he has to change his name instead of like 50 cents. That it's like, but I don't really know how Bitcoin currency works, you know?
So
yeah, I think he's got to change his name.
You got to change G-Unit to something else too?
Yeah, something else.
Yeah.
But I haven't done enough research to make the joke. So it's just like,
got it.
Just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. G-Unit.
So this article confuses me.
Okay.
So this is from thefashionlaw.com. It says,
great site. Love the site.
Kim K clones the legacy. The legality of the lookalike influencers and their budding brands. Keeping Up with the Kardashians has taken on a whole new meaning thanks to an influencer subculture of Kardashian lookalikes that's emerged online, wrote Women's Wear Daily Rachel Shugatz recently. This group of women, some now barely distinguishable from the real thing, have become influencers in their own right, who boast anywhere from 500,000 to 1 million followers on Instagram. So they look like, they're basically talking about Kim Kardashian mostly, and people who look like her and dress like her and have built followings based on the fact, basically, that they look like her and that they dress like her. And so apparently back in 2012, Kim Kardashian filed a $20 million right of publicity lawsuit against The Gap because The Gap had hired a model who was a Kardashian lookalike, mm-hmm. and immediately recognizable as a Kardashian lookalike. So it wasn't just that they hired a brunette who happened to look like her. She was famous for being a Kardashian lookalike. And so they sued her. They sued Old Navy and The Gap, which is the same company, because they said that they didn't want her name confused with, and I guess at the time she had an exclusivity agreement with, I think, Sears or another mm-hmm. company. And so by having a lookalike advertise clothes that could be in competition, that was like, could be seen as breaking her contract, and she wasn't in control of that.
Right.
And so it's really interesting, and I'm not sure that I think, like, to me, lookalikes is part of being famous. It's not a new thing. Like, there are, you know, you go to Vegas and you see people like impersonators and all kinds of stuff, and they get very famous for that. So, but do you think social media changes that?
Well, it opens the door up to, right, where the platform that, like, the Kardashians monetize the most is Instagram. Mm-hmm. So when you have other people then creating their own profiles and looks to go with that, and, you know, like, the number one plastic surgery look is given in plastic surgery in the United States is a Kim Kardashian look that they've asked for. Like, it's a huge, obviously a huge push and a huge look, and can they benefit? So people are benefiting from looking like somebody. The problem is when people then mistake that person for the real person. I don't see the issue on their own Instagram account. You go for that look and you want to look that way. And I don't think she owns the rights to looking the certain way a brunette does or anything. The issue I find is like what she did the lawsuit for, which was the brand using that person in their ads to make it look like Kim or any of the other Kardashians or anybody else for that matter is actually in the ad or endorsing the brand. I don't find the problem if I, Scott Stratton, create my own profile to look, do something, I can use it and promote it. My followers are following Scott Stratton, not the person I'm pretending to be. It's when the brand on their account uses my image that looks like somebody else's image and not paying that person for that. So I see somewhat of the issue here, but it's also fascinating.
It is. It says, so it says here, it's worth noting, after all, that her case, so Kim's case, against Old Navy was hardly the first of its kind. Vanna White, the mm-hmm. ex-Wheel of Fortune hostess, for example, sued Samsung for using a robot in its advertisements that resembled her and was conveniently placed on a set similar to Wheel of Fortune.
Wait, we buried the lead here. Vanna White's not the person on Wheel of Fortune now?
I don't know.
Is Vanna gone? Fortune. Whoa.
Vanna White's got to be like 70 years old now. Sweet Pea.
It's like Mary Hart in Entertainment Tonight. They're just going to be the person there always.
And she won the lawsuit. Yeah. The U.S. Court of Appeals of the Ninth Circuit, it says, held that Samsung had, in fact, run afoul of the law by misappropriating White's likeness for its own commercial gain. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis sued Christian Dior, arguing that the fashion house had violated New York's right of publicity statute by using a lookalike in its print ads, which is very similar to Kim's suit. According to Onassis's complaint, Dior wanted to include her in an ad campaign, but since the brand knew she would refuse to take part because she never allowed her name to be associated with promotion or commercial products, they hired another woman, a celebrity impersonator of Onassis, instead. And she argued that her right to publicity was being violated. I didn't know the right to publicity was a thing, but it makes sense to me.
That's right. Saying the right to your likeness is also right to your image that you've made up. This is a slippery slope, though, when it comes to the Instagram stuff, about trying to stop somebody from their own account making something that may look like. The problem is, it's like, you don't trademark your face. So like the impersonators in Vegas, somebody walking around in a Mickey Mouse outfit, that's a trademarked thing, that the mouse,
it's not a person,
a Transformer, the Batman, they're all trademark entities, and that you can't use that without getting permission. But they still do, but still, that's a legal thing. But you trademarking the brunette, and the look of that, and the style of that, that's, we start getting into a... Somebody's going to say, no, I have the rights to being the blonde.
No, but I think the issue... To me, the issue is this. So we'll use Kim as the example because that's what this article is about. So Kim Kardashian has built a career being Kim Kardashian, right? Somebody else has... All these people are building careers based on looking like Kim Kardashian, who built her career being Kim Kardashian. Without her, they don't have that career. Mm-hmm. She, part of her career is aligning herself with certain brands, creating a certain image for herself, and she chooses what those brands are. You can agree or disagree with herbal teas and whatever crap she decides to sell, but she's allowed to make those decisions. If the lookalikes start associating with other products, because they're only famous because they look like her, they kind of drag her into that brand. And what if they decide? What if one of them decided they wanted to be a... I'm sure there are. I would imagine. I'm going to say I don't know. What if their porn stars look like Kim Kardashian? Mm-hmm. Like, how? Where is the line of being able to protect your image so that if somebody who is famous because they look like you...
But they don't claim that. Their profile doesn't say Kim Kardashian lookalike.
But what I'm saying is that I see that line, and I get it in a certain way. It's like saying, it's like for a brand, let's say for Mickey Mouse kind of thing. What if somebody calls themselves, you know,
Mikey Mouse?
Mikey Mouse. It's exactly that.
McDougal's instead of McDonald's.
Exactly. And it kind of looks the same. So, I mean, although you can't copyright her face, she's a business also. And part of that business is her face. Yeah. And so it's fascinating. It'd be funny if plastic surgeons weren't allowed to make people look like Kim Kardashian. Like, you weren't allowed to do that. That'd be interesting.
Slippery slope. All right. Let's blame some millennials for some stuff now.
Oh, awesome. I thought that's what we just did.
We did, actually. Yeah. Eater.com. Diet Coke is desperately trying to be the next La Croix. Diet Coke, the fizzy brown elixir that powers Donald Trump's daily escapades, I'm sure they're happy with that, is in the White House, has completely rebranded itself for the Instagram generation. It's your generation, Wayne. The soda now has a new svelte little 12-ounce can, plus a few extra members of its soda squad. Ginger lime, twisted mango, feisty cherry, and zesty blood orange.
Ew.
La Croix better watch its back, because a new gang of fruity, no-calorie beverages just rolled into town and they're ready to tussle. Coca-Cola claims that it decided to rebrand after speaking to more than 10,000 people and taking a few years to test out different flavor combinations until hitting upon these four new varieties of the soda. Diet Coke Group rep Rafael Acevedo is not afraid to use the M word when describing the company's motives behind the switch up. Millennials are now thirstier than ever for adventures and new experiences. Really? Is that the drink? Is it an adventure? Is it an adventure and experience? It's just a drink. We want to be right by their side. We're contemporizing the Diet Coke brand and portfolio with sleek packaging and new flavors that are appealing to new audiences. The fruity new Diet Cokes will hit the store shelves across the country later in the month, and the old cans of OGDC will still be available too, but only time will tell if these plucky new pops will succeed in enticing the ever-inscrutable millennial consumer.
Oh my gosh, a marketer wrote every word of that article. It's dreadful.
So who's had La Croix before? Have you? No?
I know what it is.
Yeah, I know what it is. It's like a no-calorie flavored soda.
But Diet Coke is Diet Coke.
Yeah, well,
I think I'm not ever going to have it again. I didn't know it fueled Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That makes me angry.
So I like the Coke Zero.
I don't know. I love when we go, you know, those machines. We've talked about them before with that.
Make your own flavor combinations.
And I like cherry Diet Coke.
Yeah. Well, part of that realization, I think part of that flavor is coming up with is the, what was being used in those machines, right? I love the data that comes out of them. This is just a a reaction to, because La Croix has taken a good chunk of market share. It's huge. We don't have it. I don't even know if they have it up here. I don't think they
I'm not
Canada.
Sure if they do.
Huge, though. It's huge. People drink it all over the place. So a low to no calorie flavorful drink, otherwise known as water.
I know, but fizzies. I like fizzy.
True.
You like fizzy, too.
I do.
Sparkling water.
Thank you. That's all, folks. Until next time, we'll talk to you next week. Unless you don't listen, then forget it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.